Chapter 19. The storm sends a dizzying swirl of white across the highway as they make their way south toward the cities. The snowfall is heavy, and the wipers of Stephen's old Jeep work hard to keep the windshield clear. The radio has indicated that it's coming down in a narrow band, and Stephen's relieved to know that they'll drive out of it eventually. "Tell me about your brother," he says. Belle has been sitting quietly, watching the landscape slide past, woods and isolated houses and small communities that seem ghostly behind the gauzy veil of snow, places where the wise have holed up until the storm passes. "What kind of guy is he?" "Smart, funny, ambitious, a storyteller." "Traditional storyteller or twister of truth?"
"Both.
I could never tell when he was teasing or when he was serious. I guess that's part of what makes him a good salesman."
"I thought he's in real estate."
"He's a real estate attorney, but a lot of dealing with clients is selling yourself. He's the kind of guy you can't help trusting, even though your better instincts tell you that you shouldn't."
"You like him?"
"He was always a good big brother."
"So what's happened that's made him distant now?"
"I wish I knew."
"Something to do with his business?"
"Maybe."
"But you have a different idea?"
Belle shrugs.
"Lou's an attractive guy. Women have always fallen all over him."
"You're thinking it might have something to do with another woman?"
"After 3 years of law school, I have a legal mindset. I'm always searching for additional possibilities, other approaches."
"Did Dolores give any indication she was worried about another woman?"
"No, but Dolores has her own faults."
"Such as?"
"She presents herself in a pretty simplistic way, but she's complicated. Her past is an issue."
"What about her past?"
"She was adopted as an infant, never knew anything about her birth parents. But she told me that whenever she did something wrong, her father would complain that it was the Indian in her. Her folks split up, and she went with her mother, her adopted mother. I guess their relationship wasn't the greatest. A couple of years ago, just before she died, she let it slip that Dolores' birth mother was Native."
"Anishinaabe?"
"Dolores doesn't know. She's been trying to find out, but nothing so far. There may have been an issue with the legitimacy of the adoption. Not sure exactly what, but it wouldn't be the first time a Native kid ended up in a white family, no questions asked."
"I've seen a picture of her. She doesn't look Native."
Belle gives him a long, hard look.
"Sorry. I can't believe I said that."
"I like Dolores, but I can't help thinking that this relentless search of hers for her heritage has grated on Lou, who would like nothing more than to forget his own Native heritage. It's like suddenly they're going in different directions."
"I'm not married, but maybe that's what marriage does to you, sends you in different directions,"
Stephen says.
"That hasn't been my experience."
"You're married?"
"I mean, looking at my parents," she replies quickly. They pass a car that's pulled to the side of the road, its flashers blinking. Stephen's about to pull off and offer help when he sees a man on the far side of the vehicle, clearly making a bit of yellow snow. He drives on.
"When was the last time you had a good heart-to-heart with your brother?" he asks.
"His birthday last November. He turned 30.
"He came up to celebrate with you?"
She shakes her head.
"We all went down to the cities. Big to-do at his country club. Lots of his friends who, in truth, were mostly his business associates. And us. It was a little awkward, honestly. We were the only Native people there. It was clear that most of the guests felt uncomfortable trying to talk to us. The nearest a lot of them had ever been to Native people was watching Dances with Wolves, or panhandlers in the cities.
But your brother's Ojibwe. 3/4, like Anton and me. But in Lou, it's the Irish blood that shows. Anyway, money is the great equalizer, and Lou has plenty of it. In an hour, they drive out of the storm, leaving the thick band of dark clouds behind. It's late afternoon. The sky is a brilliant blue, and it's as if they've entered a different world where everything is green and broadcasts that it's spring. They pass through Brainerd and Little Falls, and Stephen presses down a bit harder on the accelerator to make up for time lost to the storm. You said you finished law school, so you're a lawyer? I've got to pass the bar first. What will you do then? Stephen asks. Join your brother in the real estate business? I'm not like Lou. I plan to return to the res and work for an organization called Mother Earth Always. I worked with them for a while before I got accepted to law school. I know that group, environmentalists, right? More than that. We focus on issues related to preserving the natural habitat, not just on the res, but also in a broader way. We work with similar organizations on a number of other reservations. We fight back against encroachment, the continued theft of the land, misrepresentation of all kinds of projects proposed in the name of the greater public good. Could you pull off at the next exit? I need to use a restroom. Stephen gasses up the Jeep and makes a call to the sheriff's office in Aurora. Marsha Dross reports that his father and the others are following a clear trail heading into the boundary waters. At last check-in, they were somewhere your father called the Hungry Hills, Dross tells him. I know the place, Stephen says. Any sign of Rainey and Henry and Dolores? The men he's tracking have pretty much destroyed any sign that might have been there before they passed through, so no word on the others yet. But your dad's pretty confident he'll find them. How's the storm up there? Intense, but brief. Still, by the time it passes, it'll be too late to get a search plane into the air. If need be, we'll have one up there at first light tomorrow. Where are you? On my way to Lou Morisot's house in Edina. His sister's with me. What are you hoping to find? I don't know. Anything that might help. Keep me posted. When they're on the road again, Belle says, I have a confession. I've read your sister's books. I understand they're based on real events in her life. She glances at him. Is that right? Occasionally, she sacrifices the truth for suspense, but generally speaking, yes. In the stories, there's a brother who has visions and wants to be a Midei. You? A literary version of me. Do you really have visions? I have since I was a kid. They come as dreams. They usually require some interpretation. Do you interpret them? Sometimes I have help. Henry Malou is good at that. The brother in the stories was shot in the back. 2 bullets. The doctors were afraid I wouldn't walk again. As you can see, I get around pretty well. Just don't ask me to sprint. You come off nicely in the stories. It can be a tough image to live up to. She smiles. You're doing a pretty good job. At twilight, they arrive in Edina, a wealthy community on the west side of the Twin Cities. With Belle's help, Stephen locates the home of Lou and Dolores Morisot. It's a huge house on a street lined with nothing but huge houses. Lou Morisot's home is 2 stories with a stucco exterior and an expansive lawn and garden that only a team of landscape workers could maintain. When he pulls into the long, curving driveway in his Jeep, mud spattered from the back roads up north, Stephen feels a little like a beggar knocking at the palace gate. He gives a low whistle. Your brother's done pretty well for himself. If money's the measure, she says, and Stephen hears the note of censure in her voice. The house is dark. Stephen follows Belle to the front door. The lock is a deadbolt with a keypad. Belle keys in the code. She opens the door, steps inside, and turns to the alarm keypad next to the entrance. But her finger stops before touching any of the keys. It's already disabled, she says, then calls into the dark house. Lou? The house is vast, quiet, creepy. Belle turns on a few lights, then stands looking around the living room, clearly at a loss. I was hoping he might be here, just not answering his phone. I was hoping the same thing, Stephen says. Is his car here? They check the attached garage, which is empty. We should check his bedroom, Belle suggests. See if he slept here. The bed is made, no sign that anyone's been there. They scope out the four additional bedrooms. Stephen finds himself wondering why two people feel the need for so much space. As if reading his mind, Belle says, Dolores wanted a big family, a slew of kids. But endometriosis. A year after they were married, she had a hysterectomy. They could adopt. She was okay with it. Lou, not so much. They don't talk about it around me, but I've gathered that it's been an issue. Let's check the room downstairs, Stephen suggests. As they descend the stairs, the doorbell rings. When Belle opens the front door, two policemen confront them, glaring at them in the porch light. Yes, she says.
Identification, please,
the taller of the two officers demands. Why? What's this all about?
Identification, ma'am.
No, please, this time.
The other cop looks at Stephen.
You too.
Stephen withdraws his driver's license from his wallet and hands it over. Belle retrieves her purse from the hallway table, pulls out her license, and offers it.
The tall cop scrutinizes both licenses, then hands them to the shorter cop, who says, Wait here, I'll be right back.
He heads to the cruiser parked behind Stephen's mud-spattered Jeep.
The tall cop eyes Belle.
Your license says Morisseau. Any relation to Louis Morisseau?
I'm his sister.
Beg your pardon, ma'am, but we've heard a story like that before.
I don't understand.
Just be patient. We'll explain. They stand silent until the second cop returns.
Nothing, he says, and hands back the two licenses. Okay, how about an explanation now? Belle demands.
We received a call from neighbors, the tall cop says. That Jeep in the driveway doesn't exactly blend in out here.
That's it?
Belle's voice is edged toward outrage.
Our vehicle doesn't fit the neighborhood profile?
It's not just that, ma'am. We've had some trouble here a couple of nights ago.
What kind of trouble? Stephen asks.
The shorter cop eyes him.
And who are you exactly?
A friend of the family, Belle snaps before Stephen can reply.
We had a report of prowlers, the tall cop says. When Officer Riley here responded, he found a man on the back patio attempting to enter the house. He asked for identification and was given a driver's license for Louis Morisseau.
The ID matched, but there was something about the guy that just struck me wrong, the shorter cop says.
What did you do? Belle asks.
I wasn't able to do anything at that moment.
Why? Stephen says.
The tall cop doesn't quite stifle a grin.
Riley got his clock cleaned.
The hell I did, the shorter cop says. He sucker punched me.
And got away, the tall cop says.
We had several cruisers searching the neighborhood, didn't find him.
What did he look like? Stephen says.
About your height, sandy hair, 40-ish, short cop says.
Someone tried to impersonate Lou Morisseau up in Aurora, too, Stephen tells them.
Aurora? Where's that?
Tamarack County,
the tall cop says. Gateway to the boundary waters. You never get up north, Riley?
The tall cop returns his attention to Stephen.
What about this impersonator?
Our sheriff up there is looking into it, not sure what's going on yet. You can contact her.
We've been trying to reach Marceau, but no luck so far. When we got the call tonight, you can understand our concern. Ms. Marceau, do you know where your brother is?
That's what we're here trying to figure out.
We understand he's married. Any idea where his wife might be?
Stephen glances at Belle, who says,
She's up north at the moment. She doesn't know where Lou is either.
Tall cop says,
All right, then. If you see him, or if he contacts you, let him know we'd like to talk to him. And sorry about the interruption, but I hope you understand. You folks have a good evening.
They watch the cops drive away, then close the door.
What the hell? Stephen says. God, this just gets worse and worse.
They turn and start toward the living room, and the doorbell rings again.